Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Our podcast producer, my 12-year-old Boston Rat Terrier, Murray, has a very discerning palate. Luckily, Nom Nom's Turkey Fare recipe not only has fresh ingredients, but it's also made with his favorite food, brown rice.
It sure is. Nom Nom's food is full of fresh proteins your dog loves and the vitamins and nutrients they need to thrive. You can actually see proteins in vegetables like beef, chicken, pork, peas, carrots, kale, and more. Your dog's health starts in the gut, and a better diet means softer coats, more energy, and better breath.
This is how Nom Nom works. You tell them about your dog, age, breed, weight, allergies, protein preferences. They'll tailor a specific amount of individually packaged Nom Nom meals and send them straight to you. Store the meals in the freezer or fridge until it's mealtime. They'll give you specific instructions on how to transition your dog from foods like kibble to the always fresh Nom Nom for the best results. Watch your dog clean their dishes, dance for more dinner, and overall thrive. And if your dog is anything like Murray, ooh, he is going to dance for dinner and clean his dish sometimes at the same time.
Isn't it time to feel good about the food you're feeding your dog? Order Nom Nom today. Go to trynom.com/oldmillennials. That's trynom.com/oldmillennials and get 50% off your first order plus free shipping. Bye.
As old millennials, we've been prioritizing health and wellness a lot more these past few years. While we may not be Spencer pratting it up, not just yet. I mean, Emily, don't count us out here. With crystals on our bodies, we are thinking how much more we need to stay hydrated.
Recently, I started traveling with at least one liquid IV stick in my bag to make sure I'm staying extra hydrated, especially when it gets hotter or after a night of a little too much fun.
Liquid IV is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier is the one product you're missing in your daily routine. Use it the first thing in the morning, before a workout, when you feel a rundown, or after a long night out and on long flights.
My sister recently got married, and as her maid of honor, I put liquid IV sticks in all the bachelorette party bags, and my sister and her husband put them in their goodie bags when we traveled to Costa Rica for the wedding. Those came in super handy after hitting an open bar in the sweltering heat. I'm a big fan of, it was very nice to have. I'm a huge fan of the watermelon ones and the tangerine flavor, which has an immune boost, even better when you're traveling and worried about keeping your immune system going. They fit easily in a toiletry case or even a tiny purse, so it's super easy to pour one in your water bottle.
One stick of liquid IV in 16 ounces of water hydrates you 2 times faster and more efficiently than water alone and contains 5 essential vitamins, B3, B5, B6, B12, and vitamin C, with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks and probably, I mean, I know for a fact because I recently had a Gatorade, a much better taste.
Oh, absolutely. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code OLDMILLENNIALSPOD, that's OLDMILLENNIALSPOD, at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code OLDMILLENNIALSPOD at liquidiv.com. Bye!
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Old Millennials, a deep dive on shallow topics from the late 90s and 2000s. But actually, this is our little summer mini season that has absolutely, well, it has everything to do with pop culture, but nothing to do with a deep dive. We'll put it that way because it is nostalgia. We are recapping and just like that. For our summer mini season, I am one of your hosts, Margot Poupard.
And I'm your other host, Emily Bajan.
Yeah, can you tell we didn't write that down? I'm just so used to the autopilot, but it is true. Like there's a pop culture element to covering And Just Like That. And there's a nostalgia factor because the show has continued to be haunted by the specter of the superior Sex in the City, or, you know, in everybody's opinion, the superior Sex in the City.
I feel like there's just haunting everywhere. It's Sex in the City. It's like the last couple of episodes that we're going to recap. I'm just like, you know, I went kind of Stefan on this. I was like, this has everything. It has old people dick pics. It has Gloria Steinem. It has Billy Dee Williams. It has a Hamilton reference by an actor who was nominated for a Hamilton role. Like, there's just, there's so many references that I had to start, you know, keeping a tab of everything that I've witnessed.
Well, you know, I'm going to be straight up with you and feel free to purchase a straitjacket. But I really enjoyed these last two episodes.
Oh, I know. I did too. I feel like especially 5.
I think 5 is a real, and I hate this phrase, return to form. But the last two episodes, these two episodes that we're about to talk about, episodes 4 and 5, which let's look up the names real quick. Why does Google make it so hard?
I know. I'm running into the same thing.
It's like, just give me what episode 5 is called something.
Pump and Dump.
Okay.
Wait, is that it?
I feel like it's not.
I think that might be wrong. Why is it so hard? How is this happening? Oh, here. Okay.
Why can't anybody just tell us the fucking title?
Well, the other one was so easy to find.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Okay, so we're going to talk about the last two episodes, which are episode 4, Vivant, and episode 5, called Trick or Treat.
Oh, okay. Trick or Treat.
But yeah, I really enjoyed these last two episodes. I strongly believe that season 1 should have started at season 2, episode 4, to be totally honest. I feel like we did not need any of that extra shit. Like, and I know this is kind of jumping all over the place just as like an overview of our thoughts, but when Naya invited Miranda to move in with her, I was like, yes, this is where we should have been, like towards the end of season 1 at the very least. Like, why do we do all this other like circus clown shit? Like, I really, and I said this in our last recap episode, I really do not think that Michael Patrick King should be writing these episodes himself. Like, fine, you want to be the showrunner, fine, you want to direct it, whatever. But these last two episodes have nothing to do with him. As a matter of fact, Trick or Treat is co-written by Samantha Irby. And I just feel like they're so much more fun and they're light. And I think there's still too many characters. Like, the show still has issues. But I legitimately laughed multiple times during both episodes.
I did not feel
that like secondhand cringe that I did during that first season. It really felt a lot more natural. Like, it felt like the relationships actually like finally hit their stride, if you will.
What I like about these two episodes is I think we did a lot of backstory in season 1 and exposition in terms of these friendships, these new friendships. And I get that there would have had to be some introduction here and there. I almost wonder if, you know, we could have just gotten rid of all of season 1, really, and just had Carrie start out as a widow. And, you know, we much like how the original show starts in the middle of things, we learn bits and pieces of how these characters meet. I actually think that would be a much more compelling story, is where we already have Carrie in her new apartment. And, you know, I hate to use
new
old apartment. Yeah.
But also, to your point, though, before you go any further, what did we even gain from season 1? Right.
No,
a character
nothing.
That's universally reviled named Che.
Like, I know.
What did we gain?
We
all decided to dump on Miranda because I know that Cynthia Nixon's going around being like, oh, Miranda's always been daffy. I'm like, no, you guys have made her straight up stupid and like no fun whatsoever. Like, Miranda has no fun. She is all just losing her mind. And so what did we do? You undid a great character.
Yes.
And I really just felt like the last episode of the first season could have been the first episode. It's just like, dump his stupid ass ashes, text Samantha, and let's get on with everything.
I think we eliminate an entire season. I think that we use, you know, bits and pieces, flashbacks here and there, not aggressive, sure, but like to tell the backstory of how this came to be. But yeah, I think that I think Michael Patrick King did a huge disservice to this show by having this entire season of exposition leading mm-hmm. us up to this point. Because for the first time, these two episodes have given us some episode. It's not a bottle episode. I know that. But what I mean is that it's a plot line that can live in that episode.
And well, yeah, like they
just what Sex in the City does great.
It's a typical like SVU has like a crime of the week.
Yes.
Sex in the City used to have a man of the week.
Exactly.
And it would happen to one of the four of them. And we lost all of that.
Yes.
And everybody suddenly became so serious and like so uptight, as if the show didn't used to have the word sex in the title of it. That just felt so off tonally, but it was so nice to have two 90s ass plot lines happening in episode 5, and especially because Peter Herman was in Sex and the City's original run. It was just so nice to see it and but also have this flavor of like new stuff. Like Carrie is rich now. She does have to worry about like legitimately getting sued.
And then
hit up for money by people who know that she's a billionaire widow.
I do love that these last two episodes were had all bits and pieces that were callbacks to the original show. So in episode four, we have a threesome of, albeit a very uncomfortable threesome scene, but it's a callback to the first season where there's an episode all about threesomes. And then we have this episode where I'm pretty sure like someone gets hurt in one of the episodes of when one of the girls is dating someone in the original show. And we have that. And then we of course have Peter Herman who shows up, different character, but still. And then what I loved is that we had these like slight callbacks to the original framework of the show and plots that were referenced, but done in a funny, updated, modern way. To your point, Carrie has to worry about being sued now. Miranda is in a relationship with a non-binary person, and the ex-husband is going to potentially have a threesome with them on uncomfortable IKEA furniture. And there's just like these little bits and pieces which were making me, to your point, laugh out loud, which I have not done with this show very much. And that is really unfortunate, because this is, at the center of it, a very funny show, or at least the foundation on which the show was built was a very funny show. And so I'm happy to see these first two episodes where we can laugh and it feels easy breezy. And honestly, I know it sounds horrible, but I wasn't looking at the clock, because sometimes with these 40-minute long episodes, that's my struggle, is that, you know, when you are making the episodes longer than their traditional show run, which was a sharp 30 minutes, with the flow of some of these episodes, it would cause me to pause and see how much time I have left.
Well, I really do feel like they should bring it back down to 30 minutes.
Because I agree.
I really don't think that they need all the extra time, because in all of the extra time, they just fill it with plot lines that don't fit the show. Like Lisa Todd Wexley is still in a separate spinoff doing
yes.
something different. And I yes. really can't say that I give a single shit that Herbert is running for comptroller. As a matter of fact, I have a note in here. Why don't you just save your money? Like, it's a waste of money to do this.
What a role, like of all things to be running for local office for, city comptroller. Like, I just.
But I also have to say that I did laugh in the first season, just not on purpose, like the way that
right.
they would want you
no,
to.
No, agreed.
You know, now when people give Carrie shit for showing up to a Halloween party dressed like she always does, I actually laugh on purpose. And
I
American's joke was a very funny runner. Like I really got to give it up to Harry and Charlotte. Like
yes.
seriously, let's continue to de-emphasize the kids, because a bulk of my notes are just talking about how much I think Brady's a fucking loser and that Rock's super annoying. So let's keep focusing on like the hijinks that surround being a parent or having kids, and less so on the children themselves.
Yes. Okay. So I'm glad you bring up Harry and Charlotte here, because Charlotte felt very original show Charlotte, especially in episode 5 with this like Americans plot line. And then even
I used to be a teen model for Ralph Lauren. It's like a direct callback. But I also want to say that like Charlotte having the sex plot line in episode 4 was also a delight, because Charlotte, everybody thinks that she's a prude because she's a wasp, but she's like a total freak. She's like the only one
who is, I love the cum slut like angle.
But she's also had like more varied experiences than Carrie.
That's true.
Writer, with like how adventurous she is. Like, I just find that to be so, so funny. But I did find that whole cum conversation to really feel so much like old Sex and the City.
I know.
We need Mario Cantone at all the girl brunches, because that is such a fucking perfect fit. Like, why haven't we been doing this from the
conversation if I've ever heard one?
It doesn't make any sense. Like, some of this stuff was like so obvious. That's what made the first season so infuriating, was like, you guys could have been doing this the whole fucking time.
I agree. And so I think because you bring up the Charlotte plotline from episode 4, maybe it's good we start with episode 4, get into it more. Sure. So
before we get into it, though, I do want to say we obviously acknowledge that in the time between our last episode and this episode, SAG has gone on strike. So that makes it a double strike summer with the WGA and SAG. And I want to say I did look into this because I don't want to, although I have no intention of joining a SAG union, I am a union supporter, and I don't want to cross any lines. So recapping a show, because we don't work for HBO, we don't work for Max, we do not work for that absolute ghoul, David Zlavs. We are a completely independent podcast. Any money that we could hope to make from this show,
yes,
goes right back to us to continue to produce. We don't spend it or put it in our bank account whatsoever. So all of that being said, I just want to say that we are, I believe, unless somebody wants to correct me, and I'm happy to take feedback, but we are well within our bounds to be recapping the rest of it just like that. With this, we support SAG, we support WGA, we want everybody to get a fair deal. We don't believe that billionaires should exist, but we would like to talk about the show. We're gonna do it anyway with each other's, and we hope that you're enjoying it. So I just wanted to put that, this is not nowhere near the top, but like vaguely somewhere in here, somewhere, so people know that we're not breaking any rules or crossing any lines, because we would never do that.
No, and obviously we stand very much in solidarity with these people. Fair is fair. People should have the wages they deserve. Fuck the idea of an AI extra. Like, and also I got to point out one last thing. When you posted on Instagram today, the salary of the CEO was like $280 million. I was like, this is stupid money. This is stupid money. Like, I think about how much I would like to improve my life if I had more money, and the things that I want out of life, like a new car, maybe a bigger apartment, like just like pale in comparison to like $280 million annual salary. Like, my God.
No person needs that much money.
No.
There's literally no point.
None.
You know, tax the rich, wealth hoarding should be a literal crime. And fuck the AMPTP. Yes. They're a bunch of fucking sentient oysters. They're just really awful.
And it's time to shuck them.
Yeah, into the fucking trash. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so yes, let's get into Vivant. Do you want to go, character by character in terms of like storyline?
Yeah, because there is some sense
intersecting with Charlotte and LTW, who I call LDW here. But, whoops, that's my bad.
Thinking about planning our Labor Day weekends.
Sure. But yeah, who do you want to start with in terms of like talking about their plots?
I think Carrie's probably the best, just because that's where we start at the beginning of this episode.
I do not understand her and Bobby Lee's friendship.
No, I don't either.
Why is this happening to us?
Why does it need to continue is my question.
Why do bad things happen to good people?
They are no longer working together.
Right? Like, what is this? Considering his wife fucked up your Met Gala dress. Like, what is there to talk about at this point?
What else is there to talk about at this point? There are so many other old friends in Carrie's life that we haven't heard from that I would much rather see. Like, be more Bitsy. I was glad
to say, I want more horny Bitsy. Like, fuck Bobby Lee. I want to know. I want to go to the Regency Hotel bar and watch my girl Bitsy land some dude to rail her later.
Yes. Like,
that's what she is so.
Yes.
Living.
I love it.
Bitsy. She is my favorite side character right now. Like, can we cut the crap with these like extra plot lines about like what's going on with some of these new side characters and like get a little bit more sprinkling of like Bitsy like plowing her way through J-Date?
I love it for her so much. So of course we, with the big plot line here, is that Carrie bumps into Enid, her old editor at Vogue, played by Candace Bergen. And she wants Candace to promote her book on her very famous newsletter Substack. And Candace Bergen, as Enid, who's always been a kind of bitch to Carrie, which sometimes, you know, Carrie needs that. So it's good for Enid to keep her in check. She's like, I won't do that. However, I'm starting a new side thing by the name of Vivant. And it's for ladies like you and me. And so Carrie starts to wonder, oh, gee, I'm 50 something. Does that mean I get lumped into the 60s, 70s, 80s and above a group of women? So that's kind of that plot line. I think I've summarized it somewhat in that respect.
That's pretty good. I would also say that this plot, like, oh, Carrie being thinking that something is one way and it's usually like the more shallow version of it.
Yes.
Of like, I'm not old, and her and Seema talking about how they're like juniors or sophomores, not seniors yet. And
yes,
I really did love the like faux outrage of like, oh, we're not the same age, but then to be then exposed that like she doesn't give a fuck about your writing, she just wants your money, which I thought was, I really loved that reveal. I'm typical Carrie shit.
It's typical Carrie shit, and I gotta hand it to the writers, because this episode and the next one we'll talk about, they actually acknowledge the kind of money this woman is now worth. Because I think it would have been very easy in a Michael Patrick King kind of world to kind of sweep that under the rug and pretend it doesn't exist. I appreciate it that they are actually acknowledging that she is a very rich widow. So I appreciate that.
I completely agree. I think that was the other refreshing part. About how, I mean, essentially, Carrie gets swindled into giving Enid this money because Bitsy airdrops a dick pic to Carrie at this fundraiser. Like, that condo.
Are you stooping?
And also, that condo is definitely from Devil Wears Prada, right?
It is. They already talked about it.
The second that they opened on that staircase, I'm like, I know that fucking staircase.
Yes. Where is Meryl? That's all I got.
As if it is my own home.
I thought that was a very fun plot line. And then I appreciated the surprise cameo of Gloria Steinem, which was fun to, you know, I just appreciated that little bit. But yeah, I think that was a very funny, because to your point, Carrie loves to always dissect things and thinks that things are so much more deep than they actually are. And I think she forgets. I appreciate also in episode 5 that she remembers that she is rich, where in this episode, she clearly, I don't think, has fully realized it quite yet, apart from, you know, being able to shop a bit more.
Well, I think it's actually just her perception of herself. She doesn't see herself as necessarily a rich person.
Yes.
She's always had a spending habit. I think she sees herself as a writer first. And I think especially within the context of her and Enid running into each other and her basically asking Enid, because the whole crux of it is that she asks Enid if she can have a little blurb about her book in this famous newsletter.
Yeah.
She says, if I do that for you, I've got to do it for everybody. So Carrie decides that she's going to go in and agree to take this job that hasn't even been offered or mentioned to her yet, because, you know, she was talking about her book the last time she saw Enid. The context of their relationship is her writing for Vogue. I do understand where her assumption comes from, but I wouldn't have assumed that Enid thinks that they're the same age or within the same, I don't know, like, you know, when you're doing like surveys and it's got like the age demographics.
18
like,
to 25.
Yeah. You know, I think Carrie's firmly in 50 to 55 and Enid's in like 65 to 75. That's easy to see, but I do appreciate that Carrie is trying. She's always been so bad at like promoting herself, is went into that meeting trying to leverage like, oh, I'll take this shitty job as like a pity thing as long as you blurb my book. But then when she realizes that, oh yeah, I actually have power in like a different way that matters to people, not as a writer. Like I think it took that to get her to step outside of herself and realize that the way that people view her isn't that way anymore.
Yes, I agree. In terms of other things for that particular plot line, is there anything else that we should probably cover in it?
No, I just thought that the Carrie getting like these random texts from this old guy throughout was also very funny.
Very, very funny.
I love boats. She's like, okay. But I also really enjoyed the brunch scene with Carrie and Charlotte and Miranda and Anthony.
Yes.
And I loved her, the Casper, the friendly jizz ghost joke was funny. And her calling come an old friend that she would miss, that like annoys her but would miss if it was gone, was also very classically Carrie and funny.
Yes, it was. I think this is a perfect place to transition to someone else at this brunch table, which is Charlotte. Exactly.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's mostly like about Charlotte this episode.
Yes. So for context, the kids are off to camp and
what school also has a school-wide 4-week summer camp? What is that? Is that for rich people only? Or?
Well, I know there's like schools that will do day camps and it's like a week by week thing. But yeah, to your point, not a 4-week thing. It's like
a 4-week overnight camp.
Yeah, that's not clearly that might be a rich person thing, or that just might be a plot device, because yeah, the only camps I've ever heard of from a school are going to be of the day camp a week at a time variety.
That makes sense.
But now that the kids are out of the picture, Harry and Charlotte are hurrying back home because turns out Charlotte loves herself some cum. And unfortunately, Harry is a little dry down there. And so they must go see a doctor, where they are learning that Harry needs to start doing some exercises to try to get that back. And so begins an uncomfortable training.
Emily, he needs
montage
to work out with his pelvic floor. I thought, I really thought the doctor eating the Cliff Bar while like dryly telling Harry that this is so disgusting, that his sperm goes into his bladder. Like the human body, and you know, for reasons outside of this episode, I'm like, I need to know less about what goes wrong in there. It is quite frankly like the ocean. None of my fucking business what happens in there. Like I don't want to know.
Yeah.
So knowing that Harry's sperm gets like lost on the way out and like goes into his bladder is so, it's hard to hear about my guy being like this.
I same.
But it led to Drill Sergeant Charlotte yelling pelvic floor exercises at him. And that really also made me laugh.
It made me laugh too, because it was such a callback to an episode of Charlotte talking about doing her Kegels at the brunch table one time. And she's like, see, I'm doing them right now. And Charlotte basically says the same thing or a variation of that. And it was like this very sweet moment of like, you know, these women teach each other things over the years, and like it comes out in these like cute places. Like, that was very funny. I had a lot of fun with that plot line. You know what, Harry and Charlotte, I mean, I've always been team Harry and Charlotte from the beginning. I've always loved them. So I'm really enjoying this segment of them in their 50s. And I mean, we'll talk more about them in the next episode. I was just like I fucking love them.
They're the fun parents, that's for sure. Because you know who's not super fun? No. Lisa and her husband.
Soon to be city comptroller Herbert.
Oh my God. I was like, I don't give a fuck about this guy's job. Why are you telling me this?
No. But if this man cannot even send an Evite out for a party, Margot, how is this man supposed to be managing the money in the city of New York, I ask?
Well, because it's so, it's such an unlikely scenario that would happen. Like,
yes.
If you have a catered party for however many fucking people, that's a lot of back, like over 10 people, you're having some catered dinner at a restaurant. There is so much back and forth and questions and subbing out and final head counts.
Yes.
And in order to do that, you need to check the Evite. So the fact that
dietary restrictions,
that
all
doesn't
the
make any sense to me. And to the point where that was so out of the realm of possibility to me that I was like, was it a COVID thing? Like, why isn't Carrie here? Like, why isn't Anthony here? You're telling me that like Seema couldn't make it? Like, what? Why is it so empty? It was such a strange plot device, I suppose, to engineer Lisa's and her mother-in-law and her dad, Billy D. Williams, and her husband to have some sort of like accomplishment off. I'm just sort of like, and in all of this, Victor Garber is just sitting there offering Charlotte a job. And I'm like, Charlotte, you stupid bitch, take the job. Why would you take the job? Who gives a fuck about your kids? They're grown. They're like teens and preteens. They don't need you.
Unless I can be guaranteed that Charlotte's full-time job as a mom will be met with the same kind of drama we got in that episode with the hot list, and we get that petty stuff for the rest of the season, and I don't think we will. Yeah, take the job. Just take the job. Go do that. Go back to doing art. Like, the kids are grown. They can take care of themselves. Yeah, like
your
yeah.
kids do not need you now more than ever. Isn't Lily like going to college soon? Like, give me a fucking
break. She's trying to be Vanessa Carlton. All right,
it doesn't even matter. You live in New York. They can take the subway. It's fine. And oh, by the way, you're so rich. Don't you have a driver? Get a goddamn job, Charlotte.
These people are selectively rich in the weirdest of instances.
Oh, they need me so bad. Don't you have hired help? What are we talking about?
We have the money to give Lily an entire wardrobe of Chanel and other designer pieces. Your 15 or 16 year old kid who doesn't give a who's gonna probably stain everything, but you don't have the money to have hired help to drive them around and pick them up after school. Like, what is this?
It is that's bullshit. That's it's that total is not bullshit. A well thought out yeah like no. that I see the hole
the
there.
Money in the Golden Blot household I have
it quite, flows come on
it flows
I mean that whole house is Charlotte's from the divorce like
it is
that thing is worth so much
money. I know. And ugh. Harry came into this this marriage with money too because of his job. So like, I don't
they're
know.
Loaded we're like
they're loaded. They have not left this place. So if you accumulate that kind of wealth in New York, and at this point, because I know this show never makes sense with finances, but let's get real here. Charlotte's had this mortgage for what, 25 years at this point, if we're talking
it's
show
paid
years?
Off.
It's paid off. It's paid off.
It's paid off. There's no way she wouldn't have given Carrie the money to buy her old apartment if she didn't feel like her mortgage was in a good place, I don't think.
Yeah.
Charlotte's I wouldn't say frugal, but she's too like rational and pragmatic to do something like that.
And that is where the wasp comes out. Like it's the way she dresses, the way she'll put up fronts about things, and then it's the way she manages her money.
Totally. Well, let's talk about somebody who's like obviously didn't manage her money very well because she can't even move out of the house that she shares with her ex-husband.
Okay.
Miranda, or as I like to say in my notes, back to Miranda's embarrassing life.
I mean,
it's embarrassing. I'm so glad she dresses like a fucking clown because she is a joke.
She is a joke. Let's talk about Miranda's finances. So
let's talk about the husband because holy shit, shirtless Steve.
I mean, divorce is treating him well. My God.
At least someone's doing well.
the grunting. I mean, just treating this Brooklyn brownstone the way he would have treated his studio of his back in the 90s with the bar, the chin up bar. My God.
it's very like man in crisis. Like all he has to do is also bleach his hair blonde and everyone would be very worried about Steve.
Yeah. So
he's like doing the machinist diet and like doing 100 pull-ups a day. Like it's just so wild.
The Hobbs Brady house is a...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
A home that has been divided, and even Brady is over this shit, which I appreciate. And Miranda is sort of moving in with Shay in this interesting apartment situation, which Shay Diaz, star of a network TV show, is buying nothing but IKEA furniture as a 45-year-old human.
No, Shay is 46 because I have 46. In my notes for the next episode, Shay is 46? I had no 46. Idea.
A 46-year-old adult is buying nothing but IKEA furniture.
Well, okay.
Good IKEA.
Do not make me fucking get out here and defend Shay's thought process. But Shay is very much in a state of arrested development. And so I'm sure they never grew out of buying garbage furniture. I don't think they know how to, for a lack of a better term, because I absolutely fucking do. I agree with John early. Some millennial vocab should be tried in The Hague.
Adult.
I don't think that Shay knows how to adult. Like, they're not good at adulting, if you will. And so it makes sense to me that they would buy the cheapest, shittiest, whatever furniture because, you know, they're still living like they're in their 20s. I mean, as we come to find out over these next two episodes.
Yes.
Shay, you know, goes to bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and is up all night smoking weed, which like begs the question, like, how? But anyway, again, you're 46 and it's not making you tired. Like, what are we doing?
I think the things that more than anything, maybe it's not the IKEA of it all. I think it's what Shay does to their body on a regular basis. What we've seen in the last two episodes to a 46-year-old body that me as a 35-year-old body just like shudders at.
Exactly. I think that's why I was so shocked when Shay's like, I'm 46. I went, you said what now? You're how old?
And
yeah, again, not to be ageist, but again, shocked. I mean, you know, to Sarah Ramirez's credit, they look great. But also it's like the behavior too.
Yes.
Reads very immature. And like, at the very least, I just thought like a stunted 40.
Yes. So if you wonder why Oliver Hudson showed up a few episodes, he's back and he shows up. And so we learn a little bit about Oliver Hudson, which, by the way, the scene where Carrie and Oliver Hudson are talking, I really thought something was going to happen there.
Me too.
That's where, and I was like, I don't oppose this. Like, I think this could be a good, you know, plot line for an episode for Carrie, but like, it doesn't. Not only does it not go there, it goes somewhere very different.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, the timeline between how long Shay was shooting their show and then and how long Miranda's been in New York is kind of unclear to me because of the way that they act in that episode was I wrote somewhere like they're making out like Travis and Courtney. I'm like, how long has it been since they've seen each other? Like, why are they tonguing each other down like this? But also, I did find it incredibly rude for Miranda to ditch her friend with a fucking stranger so that they could bang Shay in the bathroom. Like, grow up.
Ugh, I know.
Don't drag Carrie here then. She doesn't need to do this. She's very rich.
She has been victim to you and Shay banging not once, but twice within 50 feet. Jail.
Stop re-traumatizing. And don't
not even 50. 10
we haven't
feet.
Even mentioned the fucking strap-on of it all. Like, stop re-traumatizing your friend. That's your friend.
Oh my
stop
God.
It.
Carrie, it's interesting because Carrie has boundaries in the stupidest ways possible that make her character hilarious.
And like, yet offended about the worst, weirdest thing. You're
God
like,
forbid she says vagina.
Like, oh, because Shay and Oliver Hudson used to be married and they had a girlfriend. Like, that's your line. That's your fucking line. You also grow up, Carrie. Grow up. That's so ridiculous.
Eventually, there is a scene in which.
No, oh my God.
we got to say it. So Miranda and Shay are trying to go to bed, but Oliver Hudson has fallen asleep on the bed. And so they're like, well, we're just going to have to sleep around him. And so
insane.
They do.
Sorry. Insane. Didn't get it.
Insane.
I was immediately like, oh, no. This
oh,
is
no.
a trap, Miranda.
This is. And so eventually, because people do this, Shay's ex-husband, while sleeping, Miranda and Che decide, yeah, let's go ahead and start doing it. And so they start hooking up, and then they wake up Oliver Hudson, who just decides to start participating. And Che's like into it, and they're like, are you sure you're into it, Miranda? And she's like, yeah, I'm into it. I can go with this. And while Miranda is like in a piece of this puzzle, she's just trying to fit herself in here. All of a sudden,
it was so uncomfortable to watch
Charlie Horse
climb on. Well, she got a Charlie Horse while trying to climb on top of them while they're making out. I'm like, what's that going to do?
And so we don't know to this day if Miranda faked the Charlie horse or
we can
if it was
speculate
real.
Though. Do you we are can. You team faker or are you team real?
I'm team faker. I like, and I know Miranda would get a Charlie horse during a threesome. Like that would have been a plot line in another time in another place, but I think Miranda is too afraid to admit anywhere with Che that something is just not her.
Yep, I totally agree. I think she's team faker. I don't think she's cool with it. I don't think that – I think Miranda is starting to slowly come to the realization that their lifestyles are incompatible in a lot of ways. That at her age, Miranda's age, she doesn't want to – I just think that they're incompatible. I don't think that she's willing to like try different things or like be super adventurous. Maybe she would like to think so. But I don't think that it's in Miranda's nature to be like that.
No. And I think that's a good segue, unless you have anything else to say, I think, to the next episode, because I think this continues.
Yes, because I think that the failed threesome, although it ends on a happy note, I can't even believe this. Her and Che end up sleeping on the broken couch. Why does Oliver Hudson get a whole ass bed? What? Make that make sense.
It doesn't.
Because he is awake now. So you go ahead and show yourself to the couch, sir. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, yeah, let's segue. Let's keep talking about Miranda and Che then, since we're on them already. And I really did. This was like the first time I actually, I wouldn't say enjoyed watching their relationship, but it started to feel like, okay, finally, like Miranda's like starting to like wake up her.
Yes.
She's like starting to pass her truing test. She's doing better.
Miranda, for the first time in a very long time in this show, makes a decision at the end of this episode that makes sense. That it's a logical choice to make. That is something Miranda would very much do under any other circumstance. Like, this is the first episode when she makes the decision to go bunk with Naya that actually makes fucking sense and would be something Miranda would do.
Yeah, because I really felt like the commuting between that Miranda has to do between Che's place back to Brooklyn. Then to Columbia, then because she had Columbia.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then to Columbia and back again. Like I really felt that. I was like, oh, that sucks. Like that is a rough commute. It wears on you.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah. I also really appreciated that kind of, that felt also like an old school Sex and the City plot line of like, oh, like I'm seeing somebody that lives on the opposite side of town and how that's like really affecting their relationship. So I really appreciate that. That's also where like the story starts with them in this episode.
Yes. Yeah, I thought that was a really good montage of just showing the terrible commute she's doing every single day. And what's interesting to me is that the two people she seems to be doing it for don't really care whether or not she does it.
They're on both sides of her life. They're like, you really don't have to be doing this. She's like, no, I want to. And you're like, okay. I think that's when you kind of start to feel that Miranda is actually kind of like hanging on by a thread.
She is the codependency. And it's interesting because, you know, this we didn't talk about it too much because it's a very short thing. But I think it's the second episode where we see her go to AA. Right. So she is she has started going to AA. And so clearly she is not drinking anymore. At least we think, you know, and I feel like some of the things that she relied on before, be it in alcohol or whatever, now it's kind of manifesting itself into this like codependency of feeling like she needs to feel needed by both of these people in her life. And this is the mother in Miranda very much because of the way her relationship is turning into this kind of mothering relationship with Che, where it's almost like Miranda's two teenagers in her life. And it's Che on one side, and she's waking up to Che on one side and then going to wake up Brady on the other.
Oh my, yeah, completely. And I felt like there was nothing, it became so clear in that scene where Che is reeling from the feedback that they got from the focus group, which we can unpack in a second. But the way that Miranda is cheering them on, yes, is very like mommy at the soccer game. Like, it's, yes, too much. Like, I cannot believe I am taking Che's side, but I fully understand where Che's coming from. Like, it's too much. It's too mommy. And like, it's so funny that a woman who once said no one's to fuck mean mommy is now like too supportive mommy. Like, it's too much.
Miranda doesn't know how to operate in a relationship where, and it's interesting to me because for someone who was so able to be her own self, mm-hmm, in every other relationship she had, romantic relationship she had in her life before Che, who didn't feel this need and was very tough love, mm-hmm, to your point, especially, mm-hmm, with Steve, mm-hmm, always, oftentimes when Steve needed that, maybe a little more support. And that was totally a part of Miranda's character where she had to learn how to become this person. Now the dial has been turned to this complete opposite end, and Miranda feels like she has to be in superhero mode whenever something is going wrong with Che, rather, and has to be Miss Fix-It for Che. And Che oftentimes is not looking for that, just wants someone to say, I'm not looking for you to fix this for me right now. I just want you to hear me out. I want someone who's going to listen and who can just say, that sucks. And unfortunately for Miranda, she doesn't know, because she has turned this dial to this opposite end now, she doesn't really know how to dial it back.
Yeah, I think you made a lot of really great points, especially when it comes to Miranda's treatment of Steve. I think that that's probably part of like the, if you want to call it backlash, I would say like response to like Miranda seemingly losing her mind in season one and in part of this season as well, because for so long we haven't seen that side of her that we had almost forgotten. And so I think that's part of why everybody's like, Miranda's nothing like this. Like, why are you making her out to be this kind of person when the show has only ever told us that she is like a tough ass broad. She's a no-nonsense lawyer. Like, why are we getting softy mommy Miranda?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you can start to see the cracks in their relationship, just even on like a very basic, like, Che's a night owl, Miranda's an early bird. Like, it's just not like it. They're really starting to build the case against them being together, which I appreciate. And I think it really culminates with I think it's, you know, again, not a Che fan, but can't believe they made Che watch that focus group give them feedback. Oh, I mean, I know it's like a metaphor for like everyone on the internet coming for every single person that worked on this show last season. Obviously, you and I do not engage in that kind of behavior because we think that that's wild. Like, obviously, we have our own opinion on this podcast and we've talked about it, but we're not going to like tweet at Charlotte or whatever to tell her that like her plot line is like unbelievable and she's a stupid bad person. Like, that makes no sense.
So
I understand that was the point of that scene, but in reality that feels I wouldn't say far-fetched because I'm sure it's happened, but it just felt cruel almost.
Well, I just don't see a brand new actor with a brand new show having that level, that leverage to be able to be in that room, because usually it's a bunch of producers and writers who would be in that room, or like showrunners. It wouldn't be, I don't think it would be the actor. Like,
I mean, not even the actor, Emily, the star of the show.
The show. It would be notes that would come. There would be a filter. Like, exactly, the notes would come from a producer, because that's a producer's job. That is actually, that's the crazy thing about all of this, really, is that there are producers on this show, but I don't really know what they're doing on this show, because they were supposed to be in that room getting that feedback and relaying it back to Che. Because,
well, where's the blue-haired showrunner, to your earlier point?
Yes. What's her name? Abby McElhaney. Yes.
Yeah. Where was she?
I don't know.
So so that's the beginning of the end, because Che has like a really bad day, and then they start doing a lot of weed, and then Miranda goes on a really hilarious Miranda rant talking about how ABC can like suck shit and die, which I saw a really funny meme that was like my reaction when they canceled Happy Endings. But I really did love Miranda's rant. It really felt like, oh my God, Miranda's here. Like, she's arrived. Yeah. She's fully uploaded to the cloud.
There's a little bit of her right now. I see a glimmer behind those beady eyes.
I'm like, finally, there's like a spark. There's like some shit. Like, there's like angry Miranda. There's that angry New Yorker I know that's like, fuck that person. That's fucking dumb. Like, fuck them. But I mean, when Miranda starts, or I'm sorry, not Miranda, when Che starts talking about how they're like, I'm going to lose my apartment, I'm obviously not surprised that Che's bad at money. I just want to say that. That goes to my earlier point about the IKEA furniture and not knowing how to quote unquote adult, you know?
Agreed. And the other thing is, like, I know Miranda has had some questionable fashion choices in the original run of the show.
Sure.
But did we really have to do her dirty like we did with some of the outfits she wore in this episode? There was like an oversized turtleneck, which I love. I love an oversized turtleneck.
But it was like this midnight blue that totally washed her out. And it really kind of like, it didn't do anything for her complexion. And I understand that she directed this episode. So like, maybe that wasn't obviously top of mind for her. But yeah, that one was a woof of a look. Like, I know they're trying to make her look like run down because this commute's really starting to get to her. But there were some choices where I was like, we didn't have to light her like a ghost. Like,
she's already been through so much. She's been through enough.
I know we're all mad at her, but like, we don't have to like kick her while she's down.
Give her a fucking break.
Brady sucks big time.
She's living in tote bags right now.
But I will say that I'm really happy that she's been moving with Naya. That feels pretty gold, like Golden Girls, New York City. Like, I can't believe this didn't happen sooner, because I feel like, you know, when you're of a certain class of New Yorker and you have these like spare rooms in your apartment and you know someone's bouncing around, I don't think it's that weird for Naya to be like, just crash in my husband's music room or whatever for a couple of weeks. And I did, you know, so we can transition to the other main plot of the episode. I did really, even though I liked the scene with Carrie and Miranda at like a St. Paul de Vincent like thrift store trying to buy Miranda a mattress, which felt crazy to me.
She knows the IKEA is, so clearly it's not that far off. Miranda could buy a mattress.
But Emily, this goes to your earlier point of like, we have like wealth like amnesia again. We bonked our head and we forgot that we have money and that we're in our 50s and we're established and we have a good line of credit and we can buy a twin mattress from like Casper. Like, I don't get what we're doing here. I mean, if you really wanted to like have her go mattress shopping, go to like a fucking Sleep Train or whatever the fuck they got out in New York. But like, have them go to a terrible Sleep Train or even like high-end mattress store where everyone's whispering and you drink champagne.
Listen, the podcast network may be over, but I'm sure at least one of Carrie's codes for a mattress in the podcast ad still works.
I know. And then have it be funny that like they had to unbox one of these fucking mattresses that take hours and hours to inflate. Like,
that's a great plot.
Or at the very least, you want to shove them in a thrift store, like then get her like to buy a headboard or a dresser or something. Not a whole mattress.
A flea infested mattress.
Thank you. Though, like, before Carrie said bed bugs, that was the first thing that flashed in my mind, because one of the first times I went to New York was when that horrible bed bug crisis happened and we couldn't book hotels, and it was a nightmare and it was a shoot. It was tough. It was tough stuff, but we persevered. But that bed bug outbreak really stayed with me. So that was the first thing I thought when Miranda jumped on that plastic covered twin. I was like, oh, throw your clothes in the trash.
Because you're
ugly anyway.
You're about to give not one, not two, but three houses bed bugs.
And now we're back on Miranda being a drip. All right. So let's talk about Carrie and how much I loved her. What is it?
Helen Gurley Brown.
Oh my God. I want that whole outfit. It was so cute.
It's so good.
She does sometimes dress like that, but I was obsessed. But I have to say, I loved Carrie's plotline. This was so like classic Carrie with a trademark T around it.
It made me so happy.
The urgent care Olsen twin joke was so fucking funny. But I also wrote down, Carrie Carrie destroys life at every turn because she's just always like, what? I'm in a bike lane. Like, what do you mean? I have to move. I'm like,
do you realize bikes have been a cause of death or almost
oh
death?
My God, Emily. Yes.
Consistency. Is this what we, if there are more than two seasons of this show, will there be a death or almost death by bike by she's way like of Carrie Black, Bradshaw?
Yeah, she's like the Black Widow of bike related injuries. But yeah, I love that Olsen twin line. It really made me laugh. But what also really made me laugh was that every person Carrie encounters from this moment forward fucking hates her.
She needed it for one episode. I was like,
don't get me wrong. I thought it was very funny and her surprise at like how much she was getting shit on. But she was a good sport. But like at every turn, she's like, oh, okay. It really got me just from Peter Herman just openly hating her at first to like the lady in urgent care being like, why are you talking to me? Go sit down and fill out a form. To the business partner, which like that's when I knew that George character was a fucking menace. He took a public FaceTime call with no earbuds in. That is serial killer stuff.
Crimes. But I love even the way she leaves the situation at this episode is such a classic Sex in the City way to leave. As someone would still be on the phone telling you their sob story, you just skedaddle on out and you're like, okay, we're just, you know, bye. Like, it was just the way it was done was just, it felt like it was back, baby. New York is back.
It really did feel that. I mean, especially like Carrie's assumptions, right? Like when his card gets declined and he can't pay the bill, or you think he can't. My first thought was like, just pay the bill. If you're so fucking worried about getting sued, just pay the medical bill and be like, see, look, I took care of it. But she doesn't. And then we go to his house and she finds out, oh, this man is actually like quite wealthy. And then the fact that what comes between them is, you know, not a partner in the romantic sense, but like a business partner that has like a really close and inappropriate relationship, which I just really love. Like, it's especially another when the classic, guy,
yeah,
the guy starts like opening up to Carrie, which causes her to like leave. And he's like, I'm just really stressed, Carrie. And she's like,
Yes.
And there are many times during this episode where Carrie, much like me, just kept talking out of like nervousness. And it really, truly made me scream internally at multiple intervals at her during her conversation with this man and with this man's business partner on FaceTime. Like, it was just a lot.
I enjoyed it so much.
Oh, and I can't believe that Carrie being a stalker and showing up with food actually worked. She doesn't even do any of the work that she allegedly came over to do. She gets like, it's crazy. I'm like, this woman's charm knows no bounds.
And charm that's and soup.
And that's why it was really humbling to watch her be like shat on in the beginning of this episode. Okay, that was the last thing I have about Carrie's plot throughout this. But I really enjoyed her storyline. It really felt like classic Sex and the City.
There were even like little throwbacks to the original show. One, the plot line, the way she exits, the fact that she cannot stay with this guy because he's got clearly has another marriage in his life, reminded me of that one where Samantha is dating a guy who has a maid who works in his house.
And yes.
It reminded me a lot of that.
That's a great episode.
Yes. But even the throwback, I messengered it to you. I had to write that line down, Margot, because there is one point in which Peter Herman tells his business partner, I messengered it to you, which made me just like, chuckle, like, the 90s never left. That made me really happy. But I think I told you this the other day, we were having brunch, but I said, this felt like the most I've had of an episode of the run of this show where you could rewatch it out of order and have fun. Like, you need to know kind of what's happening in the background, but like, if I caught a rerun of it, I would sit down throughout the entire, you know, 40 minutes or whatever, right?
Yeah, I didn't have enough time to go back and rewatch it, but I really wanted to go back and rewatch this episode because the last plot line that we haven't talked about are Harry and Charlotte dressing up like the Americans
for
their Halloween benefit party and people not recognizing them, but then they watch the Americans like the next day, like greatest drama of all time. I just thought it was so funny. And they specifically have a scene where like Harry Russell is doing that like side profile pout that Charlotte kept doing. She's like, the Americans, that's what I'm doing.
Yes. Oh my God. I was just, and I love that there is clearly, I mean, Harry was always a quirk like Charlotte, but like, mm-hmm. I love that Charlotte has rubbed off on him, because I don't think Harry before meeting Charlotte would not have taken his American's costume and to spy on Rock and Charlotte at the Ralph Lauren photo shoot.
That and is I Charlotte love it, though, like, I really thought for a minute there, Emily, that he was going to get like arrested. Like I just, because he's going around me like, ooh, what's up with like sexy
the
kids?
The Steve Buscemi of it all.
Yes, like I literally wrote that in my notes. I'm like, hey, turning into how do you do fellow kids? I love. But also him truly strolling up to that like photo retoucher being like, we got sexy kids on set today. The guy's like, what? That was so, so funny. And although I do not care about Rock, and I do buy into them being scouted at, you know, at a park, because that's what happens to like rich kids.
Yes.
I thought this was like the perfect amount of child involvement, because it wasn't really about them in this campaign.
They're in the background.
Yeah. There was nothing nefarious happening. Like they just got to have a good time and have a good experience. And I'm glad that it proved Harry wrong. It was more so about, you know, Harry and Charlotte, they have fun. And I really like that for the both of them. And like I said, I thought it was going to like maybe, I wouldn't say take a sinister turn, but would take another step up in terms of like escalation. And I'm kind of glad it didn't, because Harry just showing up in that wig and being like, well, Carrie liked it, and then leaving and like whistling was truly a joy. And like, that's how you sprinkle in like a third subplot, right? Like it's not, the stakes are low. It's mostly very funny. And,
very funny,
you know, it does, and it feels like it fits within the show, because there was a quick side cut during Charlotte's Halloween party where it becomes clear, like, Herbert like says something to Lisa about like, you can't be dancing like that with a gay guy, because I'm like, oh my god, I don't fucking care about this.
I had some notes about that, so it's like,
oh, really? I don't want to talk too much about it, because I feel like the more we talk about it, it's gonna encourage them to write more, and I want less, I don't care about this, it's not important to me.
I think it's funny that Lisa all of a sudden can't rap along to TLC at a party because her husband's running for city comptroller. Like, okay, dude,
he's acting like she showed up in like lingerie and did a strip tease. Like, all she did was dance. She's dressed like Bride of Frankenstein. She's all covered up.
And one final note I just have about that plot line. Okay, like, we get it. This man was in the original cast of Hamilton, but must we have him wear his exact costume, Margo? I am pretty sure that is legitimately his costume from the original run of Hamilton that he wears, except for that wig, because he doesn't wear a wig in the show. That would be like King George wig in there. But anyway, I was like, okay, we get it. This man was in Hamilton. We're going to have him have sex in the George Washington costume.
Let's fucking cool it. But I also feel like if what they're setting up with this comptroller business is like Lisa and Herbert heading for divorce, can we just fast forward to them being divorced? Because I really don't care. Either way is fine.
And then one fun, very sprinkle of a plot was Seema and the penis pump.
Oh my God, I can't believe I almost forgot to talk about that, because that was the other like super funny 90s
with her
plot. And it was very Samantha, like mediocre, I wouldn't say one night stand, but I really loved it. And I also loved Seema's like, she's just so resigned. She's like, I know. Could have been worse. But that the fact that it wasn't, because like we've seen fucking Little Blue Pill Viagra jokes this whole time. I'm so happy to see an Austin Powers joke make its way back into the culture. So happy.
I feel like, you know, you love a low energy girl. And I don't think Seema is that completely. But I appreciate that she's a little lower energy than the rest of the gang. Mm-hmm. Because it makes this scene so much funnier, where she's just like, I didn't get it off with this B+ penis pump. Great. I'm just going to take my vibrator. And she's like, you have a problem with that, low rent Ray Liotta? Because that's what this man looked like to me.
Oh my God. You're so right.
May he rest in peace.
Yeah. But I also really love Seema going at him. I thought that was very funny. That whole plot was so funny and so deeply and serious. I loved it. I want more of stuff like that.
It was great. It was a great sprinkle of a plot. I felt like I could spend 5 more minutes talking about it. We don't have to and we don't need to, but I had so much fun with it.
I just thought it was a refreshing take on ED.
Yes. Also, like, way to go, Naya, on a, you know, a fun little one-night stand.
Right. Yeah.
So happy for her.
As my girl as my girl Sonia Morgan on Welcome to Crappie Lake was saying in the first episode, freshly fucked. That's the look. We look freshly fucked.
But this was a fun, these were fun episodes. And I really, really hope this keeps going because like, I really do not need it to take a sharp left turn to Michael Patrick King Lane because I just don't want it. I think most of these characters are now going, setting themselves up for some fun plot points. Like Charlotte will hopefully will not go too much down the Mominger road and will like realize she needs to go back into the art world. And I just, yeah, I hope we keep going because these like fun plots that can end in an episode really are great. And yes, there are some overarching storylines, but generally it's kept light about 40% of the time. And I need that with this show.
Me too. I hope it's only up from here. I hope the next week's, or I'm sorry, not even next week, this week's episode, the next 2 weeks. Yes. We're going to watch the next two episodes and come back in 2 weeks with another recap. And so I hope that it's more of the same fun stuff because it's, you know, as much as it's fun to scream about how insane the show has been, I hope that we've left the darkness in season one firmly behind
us. Agreed.
We can just have fun talking about the show because it's more fun when we can like laugh and scream about Carrie being an asshole and, you know, Miranda going on impassioned speeches and penis pumps. Like that is so, that is where I want to live. This is where I want to stay.
It's a fun show when it's like that.
It's the Sex and the City and just like that reboot that we've been wanting is like these last two episodes. So let's hope the upward trend continues.
Hear, hear.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our episode. We will be back in the fall with our regularly scheduled Old Millennials programming. If you miss us, want to hang out with us, want to hear more, you can join the Patreon for $4 a month. I'm sorry. That gets you a bonus episode on the last Monday of every month. And like I was saying earlier when we were talking about the SAG-WGA strike, all the proceeds from that mostly just go to help us continue to produce the show. It doesn't really go back to us. It goes into the show and into you guys. So if you're wondering about that, that's a little transparency. If you cannot support us financially, which we completely understand, you can support us emotionally by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Either one will do. We would really appreciate it. And you can also follow us at The Old Millennials on Instagram. And in 2 weeks, we will be back to talk about more and just like that. And until then, we say bye-bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.